You are not wearing order-issue underwear. What does Lex's underwear look like?
Not a question I ever thought I would have to answer on this podcast.
If only we could take our love of reading to a new level.
Well, I've always wanted to start a book club. Book club!
For masochists and other deviants.
Hello and welcome to the Book Club for Masochists, where we read and discuss all the genres and types of literature, regardless of our actual interest in them.
Every month, we read books of a new, randomly picked genre. Then on the podcast, we discuss our reading choices, experiences, opinions, appeal factors, and other related topics as friends and library workers.
In this, episode 136, we're playing Hearts of Magic.
Not at all book related.
There's probably books in there somewhere.
It's sort of a book.
Yeah, this is a book.
Yeah, like it's a 36-page book.
It's a published work.
Yeah, I had to read a lot of words.
Less words than a regular genre podcast?
It's true.
I'm Matthew. I'm a librarian in Las Vegas, Nevada, USA, which is located in the traditional homelands of the Nuuvi, Southern Paiute people, including the Las Vegas Paiute tribe and the Moapa Band of Paiutes.
My name is RJ. I'm a librarian in Vancouver, BC, which is located on the traditional, ancestral, and unceded land of the Musqueam, Squamish, Tsleil-Waututh, and Stolo people.
And my name is Megan. I am an archivist in the National Capital Region of Canada, which is on the unceded traditional territory of the Algonquin Anishinaabe.
Anna is not joining us for this episode because she hates games.
Doesn't hate. Just would prefer not to participate. Like, there's a range there.
I had my mouth full of water, so I couldn't come to Anna's defense faster. We offered to let her take this episode off. She did not refuse.
Yes. She's not particularly interested in playing role-playing games like the rest of us are. So that is what we're doing today. But we have also, as always, with these non-genre-specific episodes, a retrospective book list of books by authors of color in one of the genres that we did back when we, in our first year, I think we're still doing the first year of genres that we covered on the podcast. So this episode, our retrospective book list is nonfiction books about the supernatural and paranormal by authors of color. So hopefully some of you will find that list useful. This one was a difficult one to put together.
Yeah. Hopefully it'll be a good list. I think it will, eventually after I spend some more time on it. But I'm excited that it is seasonally appropriate.
Oh, true. Yeah, I guess so.
Spooky is always seasonally appropriate. What?
This is a year-round spooky positive podcast.
Spooky 365, as I recently saw something say.
Yeah, should I go into the intro I wrote for Hearts of Magic?
Yes, please.
So, we are playing a game that I've mentioned on the podcast before in one of our media update episodes. This is a game that I've read and that I've listened to on another actual play podcast, One Shot, but it is a game I've never actually played before, so I'm very excited to try it out. And I'm especially excited to try it out with you guys because we've played some games together before, but not one quite as focused on socializing and social connections as this one. And also I sold this game to Matthew and Megan for this October episode because I mentioned that it has anarchist witches.
And that it's sexy.
It's sexy, yeah. Yeah, this is also a good pair for, we did our most recent episode before this one was our erotica episode. So it is spooky and sexy and hopefully will be delightful.
At least the potential for sexy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
I suppose you could play without that, but there's more likely than other games to have that happen, I suppose.
Yes, there is some suggestive content built into some of the game here. So we'll see.
So yeah, listener, be warned.
Yes, disclaimer, this episode may have sexual content. We don't know yet.
I guess I'll drop in an actual thing here saying how spicy it gets.
Dropping a clip of you being like, nah, it's fine. The game is called Hearts of Magic, Threads Entangled. It is a hack of the game Mobile Frame Zero Firebrands. So it is using that game's structure, but has imposed its particular fantasy setting over it. Hearts of Magic was created by Erica Shepherd. The original Firebrands game is by Vincent and Megwe Baker.
Have you played Mobile Frame Zero?
I have not.
Is it about robots?
I believe it is about robots.
Okay.
There's a lot of games about like mech pilots. And that sounds very mech pilot to me.
Yeah, it does.
So the structure of this game is that it is a series of mini games. So in the first round, we're all going to play the same mini game, but from there we take turns selecting one of the games to play and another player or players to play it with. Everyone gets a chance to choose a mini game at least once, and then after that we can keep on choosing for as many times as we want, or we can decide to end the game and close by answering some questions about what we think happened to our characters. Hearts of Magic is a game of messy entanglements, so there's not a plot that we're following. It's designed to create a very character-driven narrative. There's no game master. We're all players, and as players, our goal is to get these characters from these three different factions of this magical world into messy entanglements with each other, whatever that looks like. So it could be political entanglements, personal entanglements, romantic, sexual, professional, all of the above. Messy entanglements. And we might end up making a story that is about this larger world that it's set in, but the goal is mostly to tell some small stories about some connections made in this world. And if you have heard me talk about the idea of small stories or intimate stories on this podcast before, you know that this is my entire jam. So I'm excited about this game. We'll see what unfolds. And I think before we start our character creation, because we are going to be creating our characters live on the pod here, do we want to read, should I read, or does someone else want to read the intro, A Time of Peace in the City?
For as long as the official histories record, the city, capitalized, has always been a peaceful, quiet backwater, an island city-state nominally ruled by the distant order, also capitalized, but long left to its own devices, controlled by the hereditary families euphemistically known as the Lords and Ladies, also capitalized. With few natural resources to take advantage of, the leaders of the Order deemed the city too far away and too insignificant to warrant direct intervention. The Lords and Ladies of the city were free to hold their power with the fey magic of promises and prophecy, and while the city never became rich or powerful, its seclusion and relative freedom from the watchful eyes of the Order made it a haven for all kinds of people from across the plain. Recently, though, a shifting ley line has charged the city with magical energies, and the Order is newly interested in exploring and exploiting the powerful wealth and power there. Hundreds of arcanist bureaucrats trained in the discipline of entropomancy have been dispatched to the city under the orders of a powerful proctor in the Order. Since practicing magic without appropriate instruction is forbidden by the Order, their soldiers are tasked with enforcing both law and regulation regarding its practice, meaning the Lords and Ladies can no longer profit directly from harnessing the new magical energy here. Thankfully, the handover of power has been peaceful, orderly, and effectively managed. While some minor conflicts have arisen between the Lords and Ladies, the people of the city, and the arcanist bureaucrats of the Order, there has been practically no bitter civil war resistance between the entrenched aristocracy and the imperial bureaucracy. When a headstrong noble house is stripped of their land and holdings without the force of arms to defend themselves, this is peaceful. When a coven of self-described witches tries to instruct their fellow citizens to practice their own magic and the Order responds by cracking down on private gatherings and public speech, this is orderly. When, after having their homes and lands taken, a noble family takes their revenge on the agents of the Order, seizing magical artifacts and taking back territory, and a group of citizens takes their opportunity to organize for a district of their own to exercise freedom and independence, and the Order responds with martial law and a wide-scale magical suppression, with fighting in the streets and magic in the air, these are minor conflicts. This obviously can't be a war. There are things out there in the night and the dark who notice things like war. To even suggest otherwise might attract their attention.
So we can leave it at that and start character creation, or we could also read the two sections at the back on the substance of magic and cultures, genders, and sexualities in the city.
I think we can read those. I think they give good context for the world.
Chapter 4, On the Substance of Magic. Excerpt from the Theoretical and Practical Magic, Volume 2. Like coal dust or gunpowder in the air or a lightning bolt about to strike, magic is a volatile and dangerous force when undirected. But, like coal in a steam engine or gunpowder in a cannon, when properly harnessed, magic can be a tool or as a weapon. years of training are required to focus latent magic into the practical effects without risk of side effects. See Chapter 8, Patterns and Harmony. The universities of the Order are dedicated to this craft of entropomancy, conjuring organization through chaos, and the manipulation of seemingly random patterns of motion or words or objects in order to produce a wide variety of magical effects. Those touched by fey power can use latent or environmental magic to enforce ancient laws of contract, calling on true names or the spirits of nature to ensure promises are kept. An affinity for the natural world also allows those with fey patronage to build massive structures from living wood, or to call on the stones themselves to make a room. See Appendix G on Construction. While magic, also known as chaos or energy, exists across much of the plane, certain shifts in the flow of magic across the plane can create confluences or suffusions of concentrated magic, intensifying both the danger and the potential of harnessing that magic. It has been speculated that the ancient capital city known as the Lost Throne disappeared at the height of its power in a confluence of two powerful ley lines. Stories of three or more ley lines intersecting, causing intense focuses of magic or transforming regions or towns into oases of magic, are almost certainly apocryphal. The consequences of such an alignment could be devastating for the region or for anyone who were to harness this magic recklessly. See Chapter 19, Visitors, Witnesses, and Things Not to Speak of. Historical record is absent of any incursions of the scale that would inevitably occur if such intense concentration of magic were reached.
The city lies at a crossroads between species, cultures, continents. Magic allows those with access to it to manipulate their appearance or body, and every day people from distant cities arrive on ships to trade, visit, or make a new home in this cosmopolis. Your options for your character are limited only by your imagination and by the tone of your game. The city is home to people of any type and any gender you can dream. Even among the lords and ladies, there are lords who are not men, ladies who are not women, and those among them who are neither. The city can generally assumed to be a place where differences in species, culture, and gender will be ignored or accepted unless the players at the table agree that they want to explore the ways that this isn't true. In other words, while exploring the experience of suffering, oppression can be an important part of playing games and telling stories together, games can also be a way to escape from the oppression that many in the world face daily. Make sure you and your fellow players are on the same page about these things. Class differences, meanwhile, are an integral part of the faction structure of the city. Exploring the conflict between the wealth and nobility of the lords and ladies, the authority of the order, and the revolutionary instinct of the witches is encouraged, as is exploring what it looks like to be a powerless or down-on-your-luck noble, a disgraced bureaucrat, or a wealthy mage. While playing your character and framing scenes, remember that the object of the game is to create messy entanglements. Don't be afraid to let your characters fall for each other, steal time together, and otherwise get into mischief between them. But always, always make sure that all the players involved are comfortable. Before starting the game, and whenever anyone frames a stealing time together scene, be sure to discuss what sort of content the players are comfortable with showing on screen, where to draw a veil or fade to black, and never bring a player into a game that they are not comfortable playing. Setting expectations before the scene starts is also acceptable. Saying, "My character isn't interested in reciprocating, but I enjoy a scene where you hit on them and they shut you down in increasingly comic ways," can be much safer and more fun for players than going into a scene where the player's expectations differ.
Is it time for us to pick characters then? And by pick, I mean randomly assign.
Yeah, so there's three factions. There's three of us. None of us have chosen a faction in advance. I think perhaps we're all shy about picking first. And so I thought we could either roll... I'll maybe roll a six-sided dice. That's a six. That's me. So I'm going to be a lord and or lady. So I'll roll again. That's another six. This dice is broken. That's a three, so Megan is representing the order, the magical bureaucracy. And then I don't have to roll again, because Matthew, you are an anarchist witch.
Hooray!
Who would have thought?
Who would have guessed? Fate really chose it. Let's flip to our faction sections and go through the instructions here. So I am T, I am one of the lords and ladies, a member of the aristocratic families of the city. The other lords and ladies in my family are my friends. The lords and ladies of different families are my rivals. The order and the witches are my enemies. I'm going to choose three attractive qualities from a list here. Aloof, radiant, and strong. The name that I'm going to choose is T-E-A. Like the drink.
So another of the podcasts you linked us to, which was the One Shot podcast. Mm-hmm. The lord and lady character in that had a very ridiculous name.
Yeah, I'm trying hard not to lean too much into copying.
But I'm just kind of imagining that, like anytime someone asks your name, you're just like, okay, let me just set up this tea ceremony.
Yeah, if I want someone to really know my name.
Yeah.
James's character on the One Shot podcast was the sound of wind rattling bones of House Rapture. And to actually experience the name, you'd have to hear the noise and experience the feeling. So T, I think, yeah, is something that I've chosen as a you know, approximation to tell humans, but it is perhaps, you know, it might even not even be that, like, drinking tea is how to experience my name, but that's like the closest thing. That's the feeling.
It could be like afternoon tea as like an event, you know, where there's like small sandwiches and cakes and things as well. So not just the drink, but the meal.
Yeah. The specific ritual of afternoon tea, of high tea. Yeah. I think there is some specific tea ritual that is my true name. And maybe we'll see that and maybe we won't. My house, I think I like the idea of it being a feeling, but I think I will go with a season, and say I am from the like House of Autumn, but is there a more purple way to describe that?
Falling leaves.
Yeah. I was thinking like, decay. The House of Inevitable Decay. Like it sounds very, yeah, I'm gonna go with the House of Inevitable Decay.
Nice.
Which sounds very intense and dark, but really we're like the Autumn House, as opposed to like the House of Eternal Rebirth, which is like the Spring House.
So are there four different houses then?
That's what I'm going to say. Yeah, for this city, there's four houses. And so I'm from the House of Inevitable Decay, the Autumn Seasonal House. Yes, and then I think I've got soldiers, I've got spells.
So I think I'm next with the Order. The Order is an organization somewhere between a university, a government, and a bureaucracy. You are a highly trained arcanist bureaucrat dedicated to protecting their citizens from the dangers of magic and creating magical harmony and order within their realm. You've been dispatched to the city to help prevent possible magical disaster. Choose three attractive qualities. I picked friendly, bookish, and thoughtful. My name is Winifred. And I work for the preservation branch. My job title is an officer of quiet, and that affects magical noise. I don't necessarily go around shushing people unless that's part of the spell that I'm using to reduce the effects of magic in the area.
So are you involved with the preservation of magical books?
No, just magical order.
Oh, well, I am like, since we are a book podcast, but that's fine.
Listen, sometimes if you spend 8 hours of the day working on a thing, you don't necessarily want to imagine yourself also doing that job for another couple hours.
Sure. I did comment before we started recording that the order is like the closest, like if one of us wanted to play a librarian adjacent character, the Order is the place for it, which is pretty interesting because the Order are also like pretty clearly the villains.
Yeah.
Not to say that your individual character is going to be villainous, Megan, but
maybe.
So I, the witch of this group, the witches have no central authority and no unified group, but represent the democratization of magic and power within the city. So I've taught myself how to use magic stuff. The Order are my enemy. The Lords and Ladies and the Order are both my enemies in principle, though some of them are rivals and friends. And also other witches are also friends, rivals, and enemies. I'm just friends, rivals, and enemies with everybody. My three adjectives are dashing, generous, and mysterious. My name is Lex, and I used a random job generator, and it gave me garden designer, but now I'm thinking I should just run like a printing press. Maybe I can do both. Maybe I'm a garden designer as a front, but I am actually running a covert printing press.
Absolutely. I'm pretty sure I've met this anarchist.
Yeah.
Who is a garden designer, but also runs an anarchist printing press.
pronouns.
Yes, good call. T will use they, them.
Winifred is she, her.
Lex is also they, them. Or maybe just any.
They, them, or any.
So now the solitaire thing. So this is each of us chooses like what we've been doing before we might interact with each other. So RJ, do you want to go first?
Sure. So yes, typically in this game, we would play the first round by ourselves in silence. it's just like the first round is like a self sort of journaling exercise. But since we're recording a podcast, we're going to do the first round out loud. And so looking over my options for solitaire, what have I been up to? I think I have been entertaining bureaucrats from the Order in my family estate, and they've been thoughtlessly presumptuous with your best goods.
Is this Winifred?
I mean, we could decide that Winifred was present for this. Yes, I think it's plural bureaucrats, so I imagine this maybe has happened more than once, and I have not been doing the tea ritual that is my true name. I'm, you know, hold that a bit close to the chest, but I do think that I have been, when entertaining these bureaucrats from the Order, serving them drink and food that has a particular, you know, ritual around it in the society of the Lords and Ladies. And I've been assuming since, you know, these people are so about rules and order and such that they would observe and respect these rituals, and have been disappointed to find that they have been fairly ignorant of how to handle these items as I serve them, sometimes in ways that are quite insulting, sometimes, you know, poking fun at the strangeness they find in the food and drink of the Lords and Ladies. And I think sometimes just maybe in a way that is, I find a little more amusing, where they just seem quite baffled by things that would come so naturally to me.
It's like, which spoon do you use to stir the tea with?
Yes. I think maybe it's a little more esoteric than that with the fey elements. So it's like I serve them the first round of tea, and they are not supposed to drink the whole thing because there's three more rounds coming. That is supposed to just like coat the palate, and then they're chugging that, and it's like, ooh boy. And then by the time the second one comes, their whole mouth is numb, and it's like, of course. You chugged the first one.
And the third one, you're not supposed to drink at all.
The third one, no. The third one is just crushed, decaying leaves in the tears of a widow. And you're just supposed to contemplate it.
Someone definitely drank that and was upset.
Somebody, yeah, yeah. Somebody drank that, and not only did it not taste good, they also were filled with yearning for the next several days. So it's just been a bit of a trial trying to entertain these folks. I think I'm probably not very high up in my family, hence why I'm doing like the serving of the food and drink. But I take some pride in that role, and have been a bit flustered and frustrated by the sort of incurious qualities that these humans are displaying. They have no interest in asking questions or you know, learning when they encounter something they don't understand. So Because of these events, there's something about me, some detail of my mood, my actions, or my appearance that everyone else might notice. Decide what the detail is. The next game you play when the game asks, what do you notice about each other, say it. Should I say it now, or?
You can wait.
Okay. There's also, because of these events, there might be something, some news, gossip, or intelligence that everyone else has heard. Decide whether there is. Yeah, I mean, it might be the member of the order that is, like, filled with inconsolable yearning for several days. I think that probably has not necessarily helped the relations between the order and the lords and ladies.
I like that the rumor is, like, no one can agree on what the yearning is for.
Yeah.
It's like, they're yearning for something. And it's just like, is it a person, a place, more widow tea?
Right, yeah. Megan, do you think that Winifred was present at any of these events?
Probably. I'm lower level, so not all of them, just some of them. You know how it goes. There's always a show of power, of force through numbers, and I'm not at the head of the table, so to speak. I'm in one of the secondary chairs that's not actually at the table.
You're at the kids' table.
Exactly. So, when I'm not, you know, watching over tea ceremonies going askew, I've been patrolling. I'm part of the armed presence in the region, conducting inspections and seeing what's going on. And while I was doing this, a witch's spell went really badly, I would say. I think what they were trying to do was to clean out a pond of some kind of taint that was making people sick when they drank of it. But what happened instead is malformed creatures started crawling out of the pond and terrifying people instead. And so clearly this created a hullabaloo. And as a peace officer of quiet, I am all against any kind of hullabaloo.
Unless they have the permits.
Listen, even if they had permits, there is still a limit to the decibel level of the hullabaloo that you're allowed to have in the residential area. So, you know, keep it under control.
I love that, like, there's malformed creatures of some sort crawling out of a pond, and you're upset that people are yelling about them.
That's perfect.
That's not, like, the main level of my upsetness, but there's a whole list of ordinances that has been broken here.
That's Winifred's department, you know? The creatures are not her concern.
It's everybody's reaction to them and the noise that they're making. So, you know, I went over and I silenced things, as is my wont. I don't know if the residents were necessarily happy with the way that I dealt with it, but I did fulfill the letter of the law, as well as tracking down the witch in question, because their fingers were all over it, and took them into jail, I guess. They'd come into custody. There's the word that I'm, like, searching for.
So I have been raiding factories and warehouses owned by the lords and ladies.
Ooh.
I've been casing these joints, as in the common parlance, during my landscaping, my gardening job. So when I'm dealing with, you know, the gardens outside of the factories and things. I guess there's gardens and things outside of them. I'm seeing which ones are worth stealing. And there are dozens of crates of contraband in my home right now, visible to any who happen to look. It's all, like, paper and ink, because there's a lot of that has been shipped to the city, because the order needs a lot of it right now. But they're purchasing it through the lords and ladies, like, companies, I guess. They're the ones that can supply it in this area. But I've stolen all of it, upsetting both the lords and ladies and the order at the same time, because the order can no longer print all of the documents that they need as part of their bureaucracy. And I'm using it to make, you know, posters and handbills and pamphlets talking about how great DIY magic is.
Excellent. So did either of you want to share anything else that is, like, the news, gossip, or intelligence that everyone has heard from your events? Or Is it just like the pamphlet?
Well, I think like the theft is probably a known thing.
Yeah, yeah. And is it the malformed creatures in Winifred's case?
Yeah, because now that they're less noisy, they're still around and people are having to negotiate with them. And so we're learning a new malformed creature sign language.
That's nice.
So I didn't realize they were intelligent malformed creatures.
Listen, just because they crawled out of a tainted pond doesn't mean they're intelligent.
Or not intelligent.
Not intelligent. Thank you.
Excellent. Now we've all played solitaire. I'm going to look at my list of games.
There's a chase, a conversation over food, a dance, a free-for-all, meeting sword to sword, an oblique discussion, stealing time together, weaving a spell. Oh, and a wizard battle. I think that's all of them? Yeah.
I think since we've already established that Winifred and T of the House of Inevitable Decay have potentially met at one of these events, these meetings between the lords and ladies and the members of the order, I think I will choose for my first game a conversation over food. And I will choose Winifred as my partner. And I think likely I just, you know, saw her looking awkward at the back of the room. And
you're supposed to ask your chosen partner.
Oh, you're right. I'm sorry. I thought I had to explain. No. Okay. So yes, I'll just read the rules for a conversation over food. A conversation over food. Ask your chosen partner how you two came to be eating together. Other players can join freely if it makes sense for their characters to also be present at the meal. If anyone has played solitaire since your last game, what do you notice about each other? What have you heard? During the meal, anyone can ask anyone for details about the setting, occasion, and circumstances. We take turns conducting the conversation. The person with the lowest social standing takes the first turn. If this isn't clear, have another player choose who takes the first turn on a whim. On your turn, choose one of the more or more of your conversational partners and choose an action. Ask a topical question, engage in actual improvised conversation, pass saying instead something about the food, or leave the conversation. All right, so yes, it is actually up to Winifred how we came to be eating together.
So I'm going to say this little snafu with the tainted pond and everything like that has made me a little, like, rudely late to the event that I was supposed to be participating at your abode. But because you are so dreadfully polite, you have arranged for extra food to be brought to me at my table because everybody else has mostly finished, but you don't want me to feel like I'm either eating alone or can't eat at all.
Which of us has the lower social standing, do you think?
I think this is other player pick on whim.
I think Megan has the lower social standing.
Okay. Do we do the what do we notice about each other bit?
Yeah, let's do that. I think probably you have attended other events at the House of Inevitable Decay, and about T, you would notice has changed. T has great large antlers. And you've maybe noticed these antlers changing in subtle ways from engagement to engagement, but maybe assumed that it was just like different decorations that they were putting on. But I think today, you noticed that the antlers are like, I don't know exactly what it is that happens to real deer antlers, but that like, they have that like molting look of like skin hanging off of them.
Mm-hmm.
They just look like either they just grew in or are about to fall off. They look like more unsteady, less impressive maybe than they usually do.
How bloody and gory do they look?
I think not terribly bloody. I think still for human company, if there was a lot of blood, it's been cleaned up. But just some skin hanging off. I think it is less the appearance of like violence and more so, I think it just makes T look very tired.
Maybe a little itchy.
I just looked up some photos of this. It looks so metal. They're like blood stained antlers.
Mm-hmm. Okay. One of the things that I don't know that you noticed it necessarily, but might have become a rumor is while I was silencing the hullabaloo, is that I have been recording each of the sounds before I silence them. And how I do that is within tiny little vials, and you wouldn't think that was that would work, but that clearly seems to be what I'm doing with the noises that I encounter that are unacceptable.
Would I see you doing this at any point in the engagement, or do I see these vials like on your person?
Yeah, you would see the vials on a bandolier. Mm-hmm. Across my chest, so they're fairly visible. You might not know why I have them, but I'm not sure if the rumor has come through already, since it's been soon after the event. I am supposed to ask a topical question.
Yeah, or we can just engage in improvised conversation. You can pass and say something about the food.
What is the food?
So I think the food, I think Winifred has arrived a bit late, and T has put together a special dish for them. And I think they are probably a little bit excited by this, because it is a different set of dishes and ritual for people who arrive late. And that is not like the sort of negative thing that it is seen to be by the order. I think they are delighted that somebody is late and they get to pull out this special set of cups and spoons.
I love this idea. This is amazing. Like, you're holding a dinner party and you're like, oh no, let me get out the late person cutlery.
Yes, yeah. And so I think the food is probably a very small piece of cake that would be it'd be bitter, but not like bad, more like a sort of chocolate or coffee taste, without the sweetness that you usually expect in a piece of cake. And I think two cups of tea, one that when T arrives and puts down this tray in front of Winifred, T would say like quietly, like, this one you drink right away. The other one, they say, this one you drink as slowly as you possibly can.
Oh, thank you so much. Normally, this would be an unacceptable behavior. You're a very gracious host. It must have taken you years to master all of these rituals and preparatory events for the food. It does seem to be very involved.
I think T sort of cocks their head a little, and you can see some of the skin hanging from their antlers, like, sway a bit. They say, well, years are not quite years for the lords and ladies as such. It's a much more circular sort of structure. So I don't remember not knowing how to do these kinds of things, but it is always so delightful to meet someone who's doing them for the first time. I don't get to do much of that.
Happy to obliged. And I don't mean to be rude, but you appear to be going through some type of temporal effects yourself. Is this part of your own cycle?
Are you referring to
gestures at the antlers?
Ah, yes. They're always changing, as, you know, everything is. But I think T is maybe a little, maybe not embarrassed, but maybe a little reluctant to explain.
I see. I have been rude. Say no more. Please tell me a little bit more about the different occasions you might bring different tea trays out to your guests.
Oh, if someone is late, of course. If someone is early, if someone is with illness, they would get a separate set of dishes. If someone were to arrive with an unexpected guest, there's a different arrangement for that. I could keep listing these.
I can see you have a very comprehensive approach to these kinds of things. What counts as a topical question?
So we have a list of them, yes, on the next page.
Oh.
Do you want to ask one, or do you want me to ask one?
Well, I was just struggling a little bit from that list.
Yeah, so I will find a topical question to ask. I think probably I do not often have a one-to-one audience at these events. The first one is, I make an ignorant social or diplomatic blunder. Do you let me recover gracefully, or do you hold it against me? We could count Winifred asking about T's antlers as being that, and T is going to let her recover gracefully. Yes, I think T is just delighted to have a human here that is you know, ritually appropriate for us to have this one-on-one conversation, which is exciting. And they are getting to experience this particular ritual that happens so rarely with members of the Order for the first time, which is very exciting. I think also, Winifred is asking questions, which members of the Order so infrequently do of them. So I think the topical question that T is going to ask in response is, I'm feeling generous. What favor would you ask of me?
Oh, well, I have to say, one of the things I'm excited to be here and experience is just a range of unusual noises. It's part of my research. It's a little bit of a side project, but I like to, you know, keep on it as much as I can. And I was wondering if there were perhaps some place here around the city in which there are noises that you particularly enjoy, and if you would take me there.
Yeah, I think T's eyes light up, and they say, "This is a wonderful favor, because it is also a favor to me. I will do this. Let's do this today."
Sure. I believe I am free from my duties after this particular event, but if one of us gets caught up, then for sure within the next couple days we should go.
It is a contract.
Sounds great. Do you have any other host duties that you need to take care of?
Well, the arrival of a late member of the proceedings does allow me some more flexibility, which I am also grateful for. But yes, I think the other members of my family would appreciate if I did the rounds, I believe humans call them.
Well, if the rounds are what you are required to do, then please do not let me restrain you. But I think perhaps afterwards we should get out of here, as they say.
It will be done.
All right.
Yeah, I think that's we can wrap that conversation over food there. And the scene where we go find that noise will maybe be a different game, a different mini game.
Mm-hmm.
And it is Winifred's turn to choose next.
Okie dokie. I'm going to say, right, I should actually look at it before I say it.
You don't have to. You can just pick one.
I was thinking I would engage in a chase with Lex.
Okay.
Since they are sneaky. Only you and your chosen partner play. Choose which of you is the hunter and which is the quarry.
So I'm chasing you, right?
Sure. I don't know that you're chasing me at first, apparently.
No, I don't think I'm... I think I'm probably the one being chased in this scenario.
Okay. All right. So how did this chase come about?
I'm going to say that it's actually... You're on your way to your rendezvous with T. And you see me... you're only concerned with noisy things. So I'm going to be like yelling and giving out handbills about an event coming up later this week. A protest slash music event that's happening soon. And so you see me doing multiple illegal things at the same time and decide to give chase. I'm realizing that this will mean that you will be late for your rendezvous.
I love it.
Maybe T is even there and can see you doing this. That you have to make this decision. It's like, are you going to go and see T, or are you going to chase me down?
I can't help it. I'm in a, like, official uniform still. And if I see T, I'll make a sign and then I tear off after you. And I don't know if T understands, but I can't go against my duties. And you are like breaking 6 different rules all at the same time. It's like you were doing it on purpose to upset me. I don't know.
So yeah, T could also follow if they wanted to.
Can I? It's only you and your chosen partner play.
It's fine, I think.
I could. I like the idea that yeah, this is on the way to our appointment. We've chosen a spot, and I was thinking that T, when they are moving through the streets, they are at the meetup spot, but they are not in the form that you saw them in, which was you know, humanoid, but for these great large antlers and some other sort of uncanny details. But I think near your waiting spot, you would see like a very large deer with these great antlers, and maybe have a moment of like, is that is that who I'm meeting? But then this chase happened, and so I am just standing. I'm just being aloof. I am just standing and watching this unfold.
So there's 4 challenges or admissions, and each one leads to somebody, either you or I, Megan, getting a coin. And then at the end, depending on who has more coins, that person escapes or gets captured.
Okay.
So I'm going to take off running. And at first, what I'm going to do is I'm going to scramble up a rickety stairway on the side of a tall building nearby me. I'm going to say this is actually the city walls. And so you can follow me if you can keep up. But throw, so you flip a coin. On tails, the way is exhausting, and I gain a coin. So who has a coin to flip? You get to flip for everybody.
So the challenge is, can I make it up the wall after you?
Yes, or if you fall behind.
Hence, I keep up.
Okay, so you're keeping up with me. So I am going to leap from this rooftop, or from this wall, onto a nearby roof and make a hard, precarious landing. Follow me if you dare, but throw. On heads, you gain 1 coin. On tails, though, you barely catch yourself. You're clinging on with all your strength. And the chase ends now with you at my mercy. Ooh.
Oh,
could be short.
Oh, tails, I am at your mercy.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I am clinging to the edge of the roof.
Huh. I did not expect that I would have you at my mercy. It's going to take me a moment, cause it was a hard landing. So like I am somewhat winded, but I managed to get up and I see you clinging there, not quite capable of pulling yourself up onto, the rooftop. And I hesitate. I'm like, oh, what do I do at this point? You know, like, do I take advantage of someone at my mercy? But I think what I will do, are you wearing a hat?
Yes.
I'm going to steal your hat.
Oh, I respect your gesture.
And I'll just, yeah, I'm just going to take your hat and just leave you clinging there. I'm not going to push you off or anything. But that's it. Maybe even, oh, how nice am I feeling? No, I'm gonna tell you. I'm gonna say it's like if you yell loud enough, someone might come and rescue you. Knowing that doing that will be causing you to break the rules that you've set that have been set.
Ooh.
And I will walk off holding your hat or wearing your hat. In fact,
this better be the most jaunty walk across the roof.
Oh, it is 100% jaunt. So I'm supposed to be generous. Apparently that was generous of
I mean, that was pretty generous. You could have like knocked me off the roof or something.
True, true. I told you how to save yourself. So now the choice is yours. What are you going to do?
So I am clinging to this roof.
Hatless.
Hatless. God, how am I ever going to explain this to the uniform supply officer?
That's like at least 3 demerits, I think.
Man. Well, I'm clearly not going to try and pile demerits upon demerits. That way, madness lies. So I'm going to try and look for a window I can swing into instead.
It's possible. T, were you following behind this, or have you seen what's happened?
I think you didn't go through a lot of stages of the chase.
No, no.
You've not gotten that far. And also, I have magic can probably sense, I've made a contract with Winifred and so can sense where she is at any given time now. Was the question, am I coming to save Winifred or?
Yeah.
Yeah. So Lex walks off with the hat. Winifred is hanging there. Does Winifred make any noise or?
Not any noises over the allowable levels.
Mm-hmm.
So, help. Help. Could somebody give me a hand?
I think you can hear, you probably can't hear because deer are very quiet, but if you were to look down at the ground, you would see that large stag deer looking curiously up at you.
Well, I make an attempt to swing into a window, but I think I just miss the ledge and start to fall.
I think in that case, you start to fall and then find yourself... like everything very quickly goes black in a way that is concerning, but then you can feel, get your sort of equilibrium back and feel that you're being gently placed on the ground. And as that blackness dissipates, you realize what had happened was that like hundreds of crows had like suddenly engulfed you and brought you gently to the ground and now are flying away.
Oh gosh, that is delightful. I didn't die. And I didn't make too much noise. Just a great day. Maybe you look strangely familiar now?
Yeah, I think once the crows have disappeared, the deer is no longer there, and T looks as they did when you met them earlier, in their more humanoid form. And I think they smile and say, "You're late."
I think we can fade this scene to black.
Yep.
I'm going to do an oblique discussion. And I'm going to choose T to have my oblique discussion with. So only we play. I ask you how the two of us came to be discussing something sensitive and where.
Yes. So how does T know Lex? I'm wondering if it's through the garden or if it's through the printing press. I think the garden stuff makes more sense.
Mm-hmm.
Because all of the houses have this... each of the houses of the lords and ladies in the city are of a season and so are quite prideful of their gardens and rarely employ humans to care for them. But Lex has enough of a reputation as a garden designer that they have come a few times into the employ of the lords and ladies, the House of Inevitable Decay.
I like that you're like constantly... having like newly grown plants removed from your garden to be replaced with older dying ones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So ours needs more upkeep than some of the other gardens because, the House of Eternal Rebirth or the House of, gosh, what's the summer one? The House of Heat and Strain.
It's actually like an amazing scam that myself and several of the other gardening companies have going on, because we just move the plants from one place to the next. So we move them once they start dying, we move them to your garden. And then once they die, we move them to the winter garden.
Yeah, I mean, I think that you all might think that's a scam, but as far as the lords and ladies concerned, are like, yes, you understand. You get the point. I'm just trying to think of a name for the winter house now because I've got three of the four.
What have we got so far?
The House of Inevitable Decay, the House of Eternal Rebirth, the House of Heat and Strain. I think the winter house might just be the House of Wait. W-A-I-T. So oblique discussion. So yes, we've met through the gardens of the House of Inevitable Decay. How are we discussing, why are we discussing something sensitive? I think Yeah. Do you think it is something that Lex would have approached T about, or T would have approached Lex about?
I'll say that I can be saying that I need somewhere to store equipment, and I'm looking at doing work for you in return for storage of equipment.
Okay, great. And the equipment is the stolen. We won't say this during the actual scene, but
I'm not saying what the equipment is.
Okay, okay. Great, okay. We don't say it. Oh no, I already said it. Oh no, okay. Choose a sensitive subject, but do not say it out loud. Okay, I'm so sorry. I've ruined the game. If anyone has played solitaire since your last game, what do you notice about each other? So, Lex, have we said you're solitaire, what we would notice?
Oh yes, we have not. Let's say that you're used to my like fingers being stained green from plant stuff, and now they're like stained like black with ink.
Okay. Where are we discussing this? I think we're probably in the gardens.
Yep.
And just walking. And probably other members of the House of Inevitable Decay are around, you know. So we'll be a bit oblique.
Also, so there are scandal tokens as part of this.
Yes.
And I believe that Megan will be giving those to us when they feel it is the appropriate time.
I will just read the rules for conducting the discussion. You and your partner take turns. The player who chose the subject takes the first turn. On your turn, choose one of the following actions. Make a topical statement. Engage in actual improvised conversation. Avoid the subject, instead remarking on weather or decor. Or leave the conversation politely. Whoever called the meeting may not at any point discuss the chosen subject directly and must speak only in euphemism and metaphor. You may speak in hypotheticals as long as you have deniability, and you may speak of other people instead of your subject as long as you maintain propriety. If at any point anybody not in the scene feels that either player discusses a sensitive subject too directly, they must give that player a scandal token. You may on your turn take a scandal token from the other player and whisper to them directly, free of pretense or euphemism. If you do, that token may not be taken from you. The player whose token was taken may not respond directly, even by taking a token. If at any point a player holds three scandal tokens, the game ends, and the player who holds three scandal tokens must describe how their social standing, personal relationships, or general safety have suffered as a result of the ensuing gossip and scandal. Otherwise, the discussion ends when one of the players has left, or when both avoid the subject in a row. Yes, so Megan, you think either of us are getting too direct around what the thing that we are actually talking about is, you can give us a scandal token.
So my dear T, I have a colleague who, you know, it is Vesper, who is another person involved with these things, and they are in need of some storage space. For some of the equipment that we use. And this is something that we know that you have, these large unused garden houses on your property. And we were wondering if it would be possible for us to store this equipment there temporarily. Is this something that you might be open to?
I find it a bit strange, Lex, that you would bring this matter to me. And not to one of the members of the House of Inevitable Decay that is in charge of the grounds.
Well, you are the person that I have dealt with the most here because of this the upcoming party that you're hosting, the Halloween masquerade that's happening this week. And so we've been working towards designing the garden and the decorations and the plants and so forth for that. That will be coming up. And so I thought, since we were already talking about things, that is why I brought it up with you specifically.
Yeah, I'm just going to look at our topical statements and see if I want to use one to guide what I do next. Let's see.
I want to say something that could be taken as very scandalous as well.
Okay.
But I think I'll wait.
Okay. I think I will comment on the weather or decor to conceal a deeper message.
Oh.
And I will say, yes, I just hope that the weather stays calm for the Halloween engagement. It would be unfortunate if something were to disturb the tranquility of such an event and prevent me from hosting, as is my wont, and prevent you from being our gardener for the event, if anything should disrupt as far as the weather.
Well, I can see from your antlers and how you've had them de-velveted and shined that you are very excited about this upcoming event. I assume that...
I will say as a side note, I think T's antlers are like looking polished and nice.
I was going to say, like, I'm implying that there's a reason why this has happened.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. You're implying that...
you have someone to impress.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm always excited for the Halloween event. It's the biggest event since the relations were established between the humans and the House of Inevitable Decay. Halloween is the event that brings us closest together, and I do enjoy being closer with humans, or at least some humans.
Well, I hope that... Oh my gosh, how do I even say this? Well, I really hope that you can help us store all this beekeeping equipment, because I know how much you like honey. And I hope that you can, you know, have some of that human honey in the near future.
Oh, no! What?
Honey that humans provide to you, not that humans make, of course. That's ridiculous.
Like that scandalous one way or the other.
Are you giving Lex a scandal token?
Yes.
Fair.
I'm going to count my previous statement that I enjoy being close to humans, at least some humans, as a confess something precious with words you can deny later.
Mm.
I'm going to try and pass off a story as unrelated and say, we don't keep many bees here on the grounds of the House of Inevitable Decay. That is more of our sibling house's purview. We did have a human once that built a house for bats and was keeping bats on the property. And bats don't provide honey, but they do eat insects, and that's also quite valuable. Though, sometimes you make friends with an insect and you don't want them to be eaten, in particular, even if you're not that worried about insects in general.
Who's the bat and who's the insect in this relationship?
It's an oblique conversation, my friend.
It very much is. Very well. I can see that this is not something that you're comfortable with, and I should not have brought it up in the first place. Let's just forget that this conversation even happened.
Okay. Are you leaving the conversation politely?
I failed to find the words you need and deny you wanted to speak of it at all is kind of what I'm going for here.
Oh, okay. Sure.
This was not something I should have brought up with you. It was my mistake.
I will give a compliment that could be misconstrued. and I will say, Lex, I appreciate your cunning. You are not content to store your beekeeping equipment where you normally store all your gardening equipment.
Not my beekeeping equipment. Let's be clear here.
Whoever's it is, I think it makes sense that you would want it to be somewhere a bit more safe, perhaps, than your own, I don't know where you live, some kind of house, something with walls and a door, that you would want them on the lovely grounds of a powerful family that, perhaps if someone were to get stung by a bee, then, it would be our issue to deal with and not yours. I think that shows an understanding of the stakes of what can come with beekeeping.
If you were to do this favor for me and my colleague, I would be happy to return the favor to you at some point.
I think I'm going to take a scandal token from Lex in order to whisper to them directly, free of pretense or euphemism. And I will lean down and whisper, I can make an arrangement, but do you, in all your cunning, feel it's wise to make a contract with a member of my house? And you have to respond indirectly.
This is not about written documents. This is just a conversation between two individuals. Is it possible for you that I could use, that we could use this beekeeping equipment to help you in a near future endeavor? Is there something I can do with this beekeeping equipment that would help you in regards to, you know, we're talking about, you know, contract and printing, you know, writing things down and everything. Is there something that maybe we could agree with that I could provide, that we, sorry, my colleague could provide to you in exchange for this this favor that we're asking for?
I think T of the House of Inevitable Decay will say, well, it was as I was saying about the gentleman with the bat house and the bats and the bugs. Sometimes bees can be very beneficial. All insects really have.
They do tend to be able to go anywhere, and you know, they can be seen as a portent and let people know that things are happening.
Yes, and I think we are both agreed that bees have their uses and their benefits. But certainly there are other insects that we don't want in the garden who have not been in the garden for many centuries. And now I find there's quite a few of them in the garden. And I wonder if the beekeeping that you're doing could be more like a bat and discourage the presence of other insects here in the gardens that are so important to my family.
I'm just going to say yes, and let's just end this. Does that work?
You can leave the conversation politely.
Yep. Like, let's just like fade the scene to black, and we'll say that we've reached an agreement.
Yeah. So none of us got 3 scandal tokens, which is good. After the discussion ends, the player who did not choose the subject, that is me, must state what they believe the subject of the conversation to be. The player who chose the subject should confirm or deny their guess and must answer honestly, but do not reveal the subject if the other player has guessed incorrectly. Yes, I think we did a couple of out of character hints on this, but this beekeeping equipment that you're looking to store is this printing press, this hot stolen printing press that was stolen, I assume, from a rival family.
Yes.
That you are asking me to secret away on the grounds of the House of Inevitable Decay. So it is our problem. and so that you can still, you know, use it. But you are asking for some protection in return for some printing services, it sounds like.
I was going to print invitations to your party.
Uh-huh.
And then deliver one to a certain somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe, you know, deliver other ones that have other information to other people.
Uh-huh.
So they might not be able to attend this party.
I think I introduced another oblique topic to this conversation, and we should maybe just leave it at that. That's an oblique discussion.
That's hard.
So.
Dance, 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 dance.
Yeah, I know. Like, whew, we've created a Halloween masquerade.
Of course.
And now we must play it. So I am going to select a dance. Ask your chosen partner how you two came to be dancing together. Winifred! How did we come to be dancing together? Other players can join freely if it makes sense for the characters to also be present at the dance. I definitely think Lex is here.
Yeah.
So you invited me to the masquerade, and we are on friendly terms, so I was happy to accept, along with the fact that it's part of this whole diplomatic invasion thing. And so I asked you to dance.
You asked to dance. Wow.
It seemed like the thing to do.
Mm-hmm. What is Winifred wearing to the masquerade? What are both of you wearing?
I am wearing, like we talked about Dark Mori earlier, that's what, it's just like weird forest witch fanciness cloak. Gender ambiguous, I will say though.
I am dressed like a glacier, or that is my intent, to be like a glacier. So it is all whites and some pale blues. My eyebrows are frosted, as well as the tips of my hair. And there is the gentle sound of flowing water that follows me wherever I go.
I'm curious if other members of the Order are as dressed up as Winifred is, or...
I'm going to suggest they're not there.
Hmm.
Because their invitations were eaten by bats.
I love it. Yes, I think the House of Inevitable Decay, my other relations, we have always invited, like, a, you know, since human relationships were established, invited select members of the human public to this event, and intended to host the Order this year. And I think there's pretty much neutral reaction across the board on the House of Inevitable Decay on the fact that none of them are here. I think they are, nobody's asking why. Like, everyone's like, all right.
I think maybe not even that they're not here. They're somewhere else that yeah. does not have a party. They're like at the pond with things that squelch out of it.
Yeah, I wonder if they are somewhere either, somewhere that the creatures that emerged from the water have gathered, if they've been directed there or somewhere else that's sort of vaguely dangerous.
I think they're actually discussing a new section of the rule book to deal with the squelchy creatures.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that's what would end up happening.
So I think... as far as what tea looks like, they are, so all over their antlers are bare and polished, but you can't really see their antlers because they are engulfed in this mass of moth nests. If you've ever seen, like, up in trees, like, nests of moth, like eggs or cocoons, that is all up in their antlers. And then rather than wearing clothes, I think usually they wear some semblance of human clothing, unless they are a deer or naked. But for this event, because they are entertaining humans, they are wearing less of a semblance of clothes than usual. They are dressed in moths, so just hundreds of tiny moths are clung to them, covering the various zones.
That's delightful.
Yeah, and as I say, I think both T and the other members of the House of Inevitable Decay just kind of not talking about the fact that the Order didn't make it. just sort of behaving as if nothing is amiss. Let's talk about our dance. So Winifred, you approached T.
I have some questions for you. First to Winifred, how long have you been here? Have you just arrived?
I've been here for about 20, 30 minutes.
Okay, so long enough for you to realize that no one else from the Order is showing up. How have you been asked to dance, and have you danced before this dance? Or have you been asked and just declined?
I don't think anyone has asked me to dance. I don't think being the Order makes me overwhelmingly popular. Although I think maybe my costume maybe draws some looks or some ears, depending.
So the worst dancer asks the first question. Who is that? One of you two.
I'm going to say Winifred, because the variation that T's party uses is unfamiliar. So I'm a like half a step behind sometimes.
So you get to ask the first question then.
Yes. And note for this game, we only get to ask each other two questions and then the dance ends.
So I clearly lose my place in the dance. Do you let me stumble or do you draw me back into place?
I'm going to interrupt here very briefly and say that the reason you have lost your place is because I've instructed my friends in the band to play slightly over the limit of what is the allowed to be played, the loudness of it, because I've recognized who you are and know that this will annoy you.
Man, you knew they were going to invite me.
Yes, I did. But I did not know it was you until you showed up, because I did not know your name.
Mm-hmm. Oh, at least you didn't wear the hat.
I'm going to wear this stolen hat.
Oh, that would have been such a good costume, though.
If you dressed as a member of the Order, that would have been so funny.
Oh, I've missed my chance. Oh, darn it. No, I want to change my costume. I'm going to say I'm dressed up like a member of the Order. I'm wearing your hat, yes.
I think the lords and ladies find this delightful. While they are, like, obviously not mentioning that the Order is not here, they're not acting as if anything is amiss in regards to that. But many of them, many more, you've probably been to a few of these parties before, Lex, and many more are coming up to you to tell you how delighted they are and how much they approve of your fancy dress.
Yes, how dashing I look in it, in this uniform.
Mm-hmm. Yes, how well you have transformed yourself. How cunning it is to be something you are not for the evening.
Oh man, but this totally changes the night for me. Like,
yeah,
yeah. So, do you recognize me? Do you know who I am, or do you just see someone in an Order uniform?
You are dressed up in my hat.
It is not your hat. It is a standard Order uniform hat.
Listen.
Oh, okay.
I have lived in that hat for so long, I would recognize its smell anywhere.
But you only see me in the middle of the dance.
Okay.
Right, yes. This is the thing, is you've noticed Lex while we were in this dance.
Okay, and then I lose my place because I was already, you know, not so good at this, and then I see...
Yeah, you lose your place because you see me, I guess, maybe as opposed to the loudness of it.
Yes.
I will draw Winifred back into place in the same way that I instructed her with the food and drink in one of our previous encounters. I think Winifred is one of the more curious, certainly one of the more curious members of the Order, but also just one of the more curious humans that T has met, and so is sort of delighted to be able to instruct them and show them how to do this ritual. Then I ask a question. Oh my goodness. You may at this moment in the dance place your hand upon my elbow, my shoulder, my waist, or my hip. Which do you choose?
Are you in humanoid form?
So I'm in humanoid form, but I am covered in moths, which is the reason really that I chose this question.
I don't know if I want to disturb the moths too much. I think maybe I just... the elbow?
Mm-hmm.
Feel like maybe there might be less moths there, but I don't know.
Yeah, I think you are maybe are looking for the least moth covered section of skin you could touch, and go for my elbow. But I do think a couple of moths once you touch do go and flock to you anyway. And so they're just stretching their wings on your hand.
So is Lex part of the whole dancing quadrangle or whatever folk dancing with that we're doing, or are we?
No. You saw me at the side, but I've disappeared now.
Yes. Otherwise, Lex would get one of our questions.
So at this moment in the dance, you laugh. What are you laughing at?
I think that I laugh because I've been looking at your costume and realized what you are, and I laugh a bit and I say, like, you are very lovely to the eye, but I believe you are supposed to go to a Halloween event dressed as something that you are not. And I think it is funny that you've come as something more like what you are.
Do I respond to this? I don't quite know what you mean. Am I so very cold?
It's just the order. It's cold and rigid, and I suppose like a glacier will either spread as an ice age or melt, but still seems so convinced of its permanence. Sorry, I just thought it was funny.
I believe I've chosen the melting away glacier in this instance, so take that as you will.
Oh, this is the last question now. I think, yeah, this moment in the dance allows me to step close to you and linger very near. Am I welcome?
Yes, I think I turn to you with a welcoming smile and lean in. To your presence. Still clearly not trying to disturb the moths over much, when I remember.
Yeah, I think as we are leaning together, some of the moths start to flutter and land on you. And I think maybe from far away at this point in the dance, and this is like the climax of the dance, or like the conclusion. At the conclusion of this dance, we, I think from far away, the sort of lines between where one of us starts and ends are a bit blurred by these moths that have now spread to your clothing.
To me, this implies that stealing time is the next activity.
Well, you don't get to choose, but...
I don't.
Whose choice is it?
It is yours.
So I think I'm going to pass.
Okay.
If it's my turn, then I am going to choose meeting sword to sword.
Okay.
With Winifred.
All right.
At the masquerade.
Ho ho.
Yes, I was hoping. I was like, yeah, stealing time together is next, or...
So, let's see. During the... Anyone can ask anyone for details of the location and circumstances. How do you think we've met? Are we in the middle of the dance floor? Did you just come up to me at the punch bowl and, like, confront me?
I feel like probably you were like out on a balcony somewhere and I was out to get some air when I saw you and I was like, that is my hat. You're that troublemaker.
I'm going to start writing you a noise pollution ticket for yelling this at me. Which I'm sure just upsets you even more. So to conduct the open the duel, ask a leading question. The better with the sword begins. If you don't know which of you that is, throw a coin. Take turns asking questions back and forth. After the third question, either of you can choose to ask one of the closing questions instead. At any point during the duel, feel free to narrate using your magic or ask or answer leading questions. This may explain how you escape harm or how you come to have the position described in the leading question. Remember that your magic may be dangerous to you as well as your opponent, and that there may be ways your magic is advantaged or disadvantaged by the circumstances of the duel. So, who goes first? The better with the sword begins. I think you're the better with the sword. And I assume you have one under your glacier costume.
Yes, standard issue. You know how it is.
Sure, of course.
I mean, you have a sword as well, so.
Yep.
Can also use magic. I feel like we've used very little magic.
what question are you asking me?
So we circle swords tips touching. What do you say to me?
I'm going to say that this hat has been in my family for generations, and that it is very uncouth of you to even to claim that it is not mine. And then I'm going to like wink very broadly at all the lords and ladies that are gathering around us.
Oh, I love that Lex has a sword because they have the
uniform.
Yeah, the order issued sword as part of their costume.
Yes. So I am going to use magic at this point, I think. I think I'm going to have moths fly away with pieces of your costume as I dodge your blade strokes.
Oh, this is complete nonsense.
That's what's happening. Well, what is your costume made of? It's very...
It's just fabric.
So yeah, but there's less of it now, I guess is what I'm saying.
So if you're using magic to ask or answer leading questions, so which question does that relate to?
It's what do you do?
Okay.
I am just furious at your disrespect.
So you don't even notice?
Well, I notice, but I feel like it's part of your whole shtick. You're just like a brat. And you're trying to get me really mad, and I am kind of mad, but also kind of aware that you're just kind of making me mad because I am the authority and you get to poke fun at me.
Yes.
And this whole thing is ridiculous, but we started it, so now what do I do? So I take this opportunity, I have my sword's point at your clavicle. Do you submit or do you twist away to rejoin the fight?
I'm going to twist away.
Of course you are.
Yes, obviously. I'm clearly not very good with a sword. So I'm like dodging all your attacks and using magic things to prolong this fight as long as possible. If this is okay, I will say that the moths have finished taking off your clothing. And you're down to your order issued underwear.
I think I will interject and say that that because your magic may be dangerous to you as well as your opponent, and because these moths are tea, I think they don't only
They're taking mine as well.
They start taking your clothes as well. Yes, so you
and they reveal that I'm not wearing order issued underwear.
You are not wearing order issue underwear. What does Lex's underwear look like?
Not a question I ever thought I would have to answer on this podcast.
It's Lex's underwear. It has nothing to do with your own underwear.
Still, not a question I ever thought would come up. I'm going to go with Victorian era swimming costume.
Okay.
So like neck to mid thighs. So you still can't see what my bits are.
Mm-hmm. And striped.
Yes. In like black and gray.
So we're down to our skiffies.
Yes.
Uh-huh. With our swords.
The lords and ladies who have gathered are delighted. No one is making any attempt to intervene.
Of course not.
This is the best thing that's happened at one of these in a while.
So I think this is clearly not a fair fight, and I am fed up with a lot of this nonsense. So I'm going to use magic and start inking your body with the various ordinances you have broken, including impersonating an officer of the quiet and, you know, taking my hat and all these nonsense kinds of things. So it's like chapter and verse in ink on your body.
Is that standard protocol?
Listen, is any of this standard protocol?
Your underwear is. I'm just going to, like, jump over a hedge and run away.
Well, that's not how the duel resolves, though. So, sorry. According to Meeting Sword to Sword, you take turns asking leading questions. Anytime after the third leading question, you can choose to ask one of the closing questions instead.
Sure. Okay, so you get your sword point well between us inside my guard, because I'm not very good at sword fighting. If you drive it home, you will kill me. Do you drive it home, or do you allow me to step back and recover myself?
I step back. I'm not about to bring bloodshed over something so ridiculous in T's home. And clearly I'm surrounded by people who think this is hilarious.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so now I run away.
Yes, I think it makes sense to me that you had used that letters of the law appearing on Lex's skin to distract them enough to get them cornered under the point of your sword. But yeah, you show mercy, and they run away in their underpants.
And to be fair, Lex did not take advantage when I was clinging from the house.
That's true. You are returning the favor. I think the lords and ladies, who have been watching the sword fight, look slightly disappointed. And I think maybe you even hear one of them whispering, like, it's so rare that somebody dies on the grounds. I was so looking forward to it.
That's not really something that this house is known for, you know? Like, the inevitable decay, like, you might have someone injured.
Mm-hmm.
But dying is the the winter house is thing.
Well, you could decompose there.
Yeah, you could certainly decompose here. I think in general, there's not much, there's not many mortals passing away on the grounds of any of the houses.
True.
Unless you count plants as mortals.
Insects.
And insects, yeah.
So shall we go around and end this?
Yeah, I think certainly there's more story we could tell, but I think that is a dramatic interaction to end our game on.
So we go around the table one last time. On your turn, bring up any unresolved questions that you have about your character's fates.
Yeah, say what you think the possible outcomes could be. The other players can contribute possible outcomes as well. Oh, not just my character, any character's fates. Yeah, is Lex going to get in any trouble? Lex has been making some big swings and it has not caught up with them yet. And I wonder if it will or what you imagine will happen.
I imagine that I am definitely going to ground for a while because my body is covered in writing.
Yeah.
Which means I really can't be seen in public very often. And so, yeah, that is, I think, my near future is being in hiding and shuffling from safe house to safe house, because the order is definitely on the lookout for someone with laws written all over their body.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like it could turn into a kind of cat and mouse frenemies situation.
Potentially, yes.
For sure. There are certainly, I think you two didn't lean into some of the moves in meeting sword to sword, but there are some, definitely some flirtier options on that leading questions menu. Yeah, so Lex is in hiding. That totally makes sense. I think for Winifred, I'm curious to know, given the sort of, I guess we don't know everything that happened between T and Winifred, but I wonder how much Winifred will. I feel like T is obviously sincerely interested in Winifred, but also kind of fucking with her a little. And I wonder how much patience Winifred has for that. How invested they are in that connection. If they are going to try to see them again after the masquerade, or if that has chilled after some of the events of the evening.
I have a more immediate question, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Specifically about Winifred is Winifred is down to her underwear at this party. Is T going to offer them clothing? Are you inviting them to a bedroom somewhere to get dressed in something else so that they can potentially go home or something else can happen?
I think what happens, I think T was probably standing off a little from the crowd that had gathered to watch this sword fight. I think T knew that they weren't going to intervene, but since they are maybe not friends, but certainly entanglements with both of these mortals, they remove themselves from that situation a bit and wait to see what the outcome will be. And then seeing that Winifred has lost her clothes, the nest that is in their antlers that evening splits open and, hundreds more, moths, I think a different color, I think, than the ones I've been imagining, like, sort of plain brown moths all over T's own body, but I think these sort of unearthly blue moths bloom out from that nest and start clinging to Winifred and covering keeping their human modesty for the evening.
Maybe I've had enough of this party, however.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I thank T for the dance and the coverings, and then I skedaddle before someone catches me in my improper attire.
Mm-hmm.
You do find your hat sitting on a bush just before you leave the party grounds.
Dang it. Can't hold this grudge.
I think as you leave the grounds of the House of Inevitable Decay and make your way home, and like the farther away you get from the party and the closer you get to home, I think maybe when you arrive, you notice that these moths, when you look down, they've all like frozen, like literally frozen. Like they were living moths, but by the time you get home, they're made of ice.
Oh, wow. So cold, so cold. Does that mean it's gonna melt? Or do I just have this frozen shell of a moth?
Yeah, no, you can break them off, like, or like take a warm shower and they'll melt off.
Okay. Do you think that Winifred gets a talking to or many demerit points from the events of the night that have occurred?
Nobody knows. Nobody else from the Order attended. So if you don't report it, nobody will know that you received the correct invitation and attended.
Yeah, and I think it would be in Winifred's best interest to not reveal that they were the only member of the Order who got the correct invitation. But I think, yeah, you'd have to, if you want to report on Lex that, you know, there is a person identifiable by tattoos of the various laws and infractions that they've made. Yeah, you might have to attach that to a different report. So I wonder if Winifred even does that, or if like Lex is in hiding, but actually there's no one looking for them except for Winifred.
Well, I've already written Lex up as a person of interest from our last interaction. So I just make like an ad amendment that current appearance is, you know, covered in the writings of their crimes. And in terms of the relationship between Winifred and T, I mean, I think it remains cordial. The events of the masquerade seem to get maybe a little more out of hand than would if Winifred would have liked in their off hours.
Mm-hmm. Very disorderly.
Very disorderly.
So we have a more professional relationship from there on out?
Maybe. Like, it's hard to say.
I'm going to say also that, like, I'm going to get one of these laws actually tattooed onto me.
Nice.
I think it says, like, statute 204.C on, like, my arm in cursive. And that's, like, you know, distribution of
unauthorized materials.
Yeah, distribution of unauthorized written material, and I'm very proud of that one. So I think I'm going to get that as an actual tattoo, which is very funny to me and the other people in the gardening business.
Mm-hmm.
It's usually covered up, though.
I mean, it could be that T leads Winifred down a completely wild path of throwing away their career with the guard or becoming basically a double-crossing spy.
Mm-hmm.
To bring more nonsense into the world instead of less.
Yeah, absolutely. I think if that relationship continued, that would be what T would be sort of pressing on Winifred to do. Is T likes Winifred and does not like the Order, and either wouldn't be asking them to, like, you know, quit or renounce them, but would be like, trying to lure them into, being a bit of a double agent.
Mm-hmm. Using their innate curiosity is probably,
mm-hmm,
that's where it starts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I don't know. I don't know if it would succeed after the evening we had. I was just thinking that T, like the direction T might go in, rather than trying to raise the topic again, is just to start serving slipping specific food or drink to Winifred at these events that will cause certain reactions.
Oh.
To see how she responds. I don't want to get too into the specifics of that because we should wrap it up. But I think, yes, I think Lex is underground getting tattoos over their magic tattoos, and T is serving messages surreptitiously to Winifred. And with time, We will see whether or not that will result in anything. Yeah, are there any other questions that we have?
I'm also using the printing press to publish scandalous fan fiction about unnamed order officials and members of the Lords and Ladies.
Oh, I love that. Oh, you're doing a gossip rag. Yes. Oh, I love that. If we were going to keep playing Winifred and T would definitely have an oblique discussion about these gossip columnists and what they're on about. That was Hearts of Magic. If we ever played it again, it could go totally differently. And that's the fun of tabletop games. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Book Club for Masochists. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. Like, rate, subscribe, leave a review, and help other people find the show.
Let us know if you like these game-playing podcasts that we do occasionally.
Mm-hmm.
For all our URLs and social media accounts, the 4 on our name is a numeral. You can go to our website at bookclub4m.com, join our Facebook group at facebook.com/group/bookclub4m, and find us on Twitter or on Instagram at bookclub4m. Our email address is bookclub4m@gmail.com. And thank you to the person TNT who just sent us a very nice email recently.
On our website, you can find show notes that will provide links to things we mentioned, social media info for everyone who appeared in this episode, and our genre-based book list titles by authors of color.
You can suggest a genre or title for us to read, or request a recommendation from us. We have a form you can fill out on our website. We can't promise we'll read your suggestion, but if you ask for a recommendation, we will give you one.
All opinions are our own and do not reflect our places of employment, if they exist.
Our theme music is To a Racket by Dark Sun from the Free Music Archive.
New episodes are the first and third Tuesday of every month.
Join us again on Tuesday, November 2nd, when we'll be discussing the nonfiction genre of music.
Then on Tuesday, November 19th, we'll be talking about adaptations of books.
I need to feed Heidi before we continue, because she's up in my grill already. Be right back.
Heidi, let's go. Just yell across the apartment. It's very effective.
Yes, I know, especially when we're both wearing headphones.
That's a scandal token. I can't tell when you're in or out of character.
I need to do more funny accents, I guess.